Welcome to this week's episode of the Geek Offensive Podcast. This week we have David Zuckman from Obscure Reference Games. He has this amazing game that Ken and I played called Overlords of Infamy. And David, this was a lot of fun. I actually can't wait for people to hear this episode because this is something I don't know a lot about. And it was just fun for me to like actually listen to someone who's in the industry and, you know, actually create this game that was so accessible for someone like me, but still had that like feel of quality. It was like much more complex,
engaging, in depth.
Yeah, it wasn't just, you know, shoots and ladders. But yeah, awesome. Dave, thanks for being on, man.
Yeah, please keep going.
But yeah, so Overlords of Infamy, David, where can they? I mean, it was a Kickstarter game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, where can they find you? Where can they support this?
Oh, well, you can find us on obscurereferencegames.com or overlordsofinfamy.com. Oh. And we're also on Twitter with OBSREF Games, OBSREF Games. That's on Instagram, we're obscure_reference_games. Facebook, just Obscure Reference Games.
Okay. And Ken, where can they find you?
They can find me at Tyranno de Bergerac.
You evil fuck. Anyway.
That was a great voice.
I pulled it out from time to time, you see.
Not as British in that one. It was
not,
just more
not as British.
Yeah, it's just more like
that was haughty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Little foppish.
Yeah. Carry on.
If you want to go British, you definitely got to go evil British voice. For Lord Aether. I'm a 3,000-year-old wizard.
We're going to have you back on, and we're just going to do a drama of like all the characters.
Can we do a radio play?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's actually what this studio is used for normally.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Fuck. Shit, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, we'll schedule that out. Anyway. Yeah.
All right.
And we'll let Jason show up at the very end.
Yeah. Okay.
And miss Hey, out. Guys, what's going on in here?
Who are you, dear boy?
And Ken,
are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. All right. Ken, where can they find you?
At Tyranno de Bergerac. Why aren't you listening?
Is that handle taken?
I don't know. I feel like I should go swoop it up.
Yeah,
I
jump on that.
It's pretty long, so I'm like, I don't think someone would take it just because it's so many characters.
No, but you would.
Well, I mean, I maybe you can get
okay,
to
this doesn't go up till Tuesday, so you got time to grab that. Okay. So, Ken, where can they find you on social media?
At Ken Rolo, or at the location I regularly abide in, at Comics TNT.
You're doing the next show with that entire character.
Wait, so...
I hope so.
I have Tyranno de Bergerac, and I also have Smooth Ken Rolo
yes.
coming to you live over the airwaves.
Will you play me some jazz music?
Next up, we've got... No, yeah. Daybreak.
All right.
And you can find me on Instagram at Justin Malari and on Twitter at Justin_Malari. And don't forget to check out the other two shows on the Geek Say What Network. We have Geek AO hosted by Justin Madriaga and Ish, and Ready Set Geek hosted by Alex Gullett. And thank you to Wayland Productions for letting us share the space with them and letting us use their equipment. You can find them at waylandproductions.ws. And shout out to Jordan Dene, our Geek Apparel sponsor out of Brooklyn, New York. She is a Geek Apparel sponsor that specializes in helping you look nerdy, and she's eco-friendly. So check her out at jordandene.com. And I think that's enough of the business. Let's get to the show. Cue my music.
And I did it.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, save that for the show.
All right.
No,
we're good. Okay, yeah. So you did it for 6 months? Oh, wait, hold on. Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, l'chaim.
Cheers. Cheers again. Yeah. There you go. Wait, so you saw Yes Man and you actually did that in real life for 6 months?
That's a good idea. I'm going to try that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay.
You must have some good people around you because my friends would take advantage of that.
I didn't tell anyone that's what I was doing.
Smart.
I only knew that I was doing it. I basically said it for myself. Mm-hmm. It was at one of those points in my life where I was in college and I was feeling like I was at a dead end and I was pretty depressed, or whatever. And I was like, I need a change. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll try this. And I did. And it was great. And I made a lot of connections. Some of my best friends today are because I said yes to going to a random Frisbee game, like a single random Frisbee game when I was 24. And some of my best friends today I met at that game.
Oh, what? See, that's the perfect scenario. That's the best case scenario for doing that.
Yeah, but that's pretty great.
Did it ever go poorly?
I'm trying to think.
No one went like, hey, give me $50. Like,
they somebody told me I should put $2,000 down on a hand of blackjack. That was before I was a high roller. I'm not really a high roller. I like gambling, so sometimes I do bigger bets. That was the first time I put down $2,000 on a hand of blackjack, and the dealer got a blackjack.
Good.
Oh, that is...
Yeah.
Ooh, that's
I was doing really well up to that point, and we were drinking, so he's just like, no, dude, $2,000, put it down. You've got it sitting right there. I'm like... All right, I'm playing with the house's money anyway. Why not?
Okay, and, well, it's house money.
Okay, so you're already up. Okay, that I can understand.
I was up a bit, but after that, I was back to even. I didn't go back up that trip.
Okay, well, at least, okay, if that was the worst that happened to you, like, maybe, like, doing it and not telling people, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Saying yes has this ridiculous positive effect on your life. It's a psychological thing. It's got to be a psychological thing. Mm-hmm. But saying no is just such obviously a negative connotation with it. But if you start saying yes, you'll feel more positive.
Yeah, I guess that one less bit of negativity in your life, I guess that would just add up over time, right? Like you're not saying
no. I've noticed that, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so
wait, so did making this game happen? Was that related to that?
Not to that. I would say it's probably a direct byproduct somewhere down the line. But it was
like A and B equal to C being the game.
Yeah.
Like, I made this great friend. That friend said, "Hey, let's make a board game." And that board game.
You should make that into a board game. And here it is.
That's pretty much exactly what happened. So I had gone through a breakup of sorts. Like you do. And I was looking for something to get my mind off her because she was kind of messing with my head, right?
She lingered in your brain.
She did. She did. And it's not her fault or anything like that. It's just I couldn't get over it. So I was playing a lot of...
It happens in a breakup, yeah.
Yeah. I was playing a lot of board games with a friend, and we pitched the idea back and forth of making our own game. It was mostly just a joke at that time or whatever. And then I started thinking about the idea... What if you made a game from the perspective of a bad guy? And I couldn't get that thought out of my head. And so, within the next few days, I'd already made my first prototype for it. And my friends at work started giving me more ideas. And we were like, oh, yeah, what if this is one of the plots that you do? Oh, and this one. Oh, what if you make everyone's socks slightly damp? And I'm like, that is just terrible. Why would you think that? I think probably the worst thing I could think of is throttling internet speeds to 56K, and both of those cards made it in the final version. Mm-hmm. Nice. So,
now, at the time, where were you working?
Same place. I still work.
Oh, okay.
It's Arvado Digital Services. We work as a vendor for Microsoft.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
it's a good job.
Yeah. So, okay, how long ago did, folks, we're talking about David Zuckman's game, Overlords of Infamy. How long ago did you start developing this?
May of 2014.
May of 2014.
Yeah.
And then was this your first game?
This is our first game.
Okay. And it's like a complete side venture. You weren't like working for a gaming company or anything?
No. Originally the idea was, okay, let me make the game. Let me get some really terrible art and then just give it to my friends.
Huh.
That was the idea. But it wasn't until I had something really concrete that my buddies that I mentioned that were at work with me, there were five of us at the time, they're like, you need to make this into a real thing. You need to put this on Kickstarter. This needs to be a game that people play.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, as I do the shrug motion. And
you were out of the yes phase, so you just said okay.
Right. The yes phase was several years prior.
Right.
But
okay.
No, I said... Okay, that sounds cool. Let's look into it. So we actually seriously started looking into it. And within, I think, 4 months of that point, we established our business, Obscure Reference Games. And we started going to conventions and, like, a lot of conventions. And it's never slowed down. We just keep going to conventions now. It's great. I love it. It's not something I ever saw myself doing.
Yeah, that's actually the dream. Were you ever like kind of into that scene before? Did you never. Ever go to Comic? No, so never.
Prior to Strategicon of February 2015, I had never been to a convention in my life.
Oh, wow.
Wait, I take that back. I went to E3 for one day, 1 year, and I found it quite boring. But aside from that,
I mean, especially too, like, was when you first set up, was it at, because like cons are kind of split up. You've got like the vendor booths. Did you have that, or did you just set up in the games area to demo stuff for people?
So strategic cons are really interesting setup. They set up in the LAX Hilton Hotel, and they have the top, or they have the bottom three floors. So the lobby and two floors above that completely booked out for this convention, just for Strategicon. So some of the floors are specifically for role-playing, and then you have a couple of rooms that are for video games or collectible card games. And then you also have this wide-open gaming area below the lobby floor. It's the lower lobby, I guess you call it. And then you have a huge board game room where they run tournaments and they do demos, and right across from that, you have the dealer room. The dealer room's where they're selling everything. That's where you would have your traditional booth.
Yeah, your vendors and whatnot.
We weren't in any of those places. We were in the foyer directly between the board game hall and the dealer room.
Oh, so you kind of snuck in there. You kind of went over the rate.
There were other people there, too.
Right. I guess that's the thing at these board games.
It was. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. We had this tiny little table right at the corner of one of the walls, a small portion of wall. We had no kind of advertising whatsoever. We just had us set up with a really crappy poster board version of our game. And that was our first experience. And based off of the feedback that we got at that point, we're like, okay, maybe we do have something here.
That's actually kind of genius, like easy, cheap, affordable marketing. And for folks who have never been to a gaming convention like that, the vibe in general is far different from like Comic-Con or WonderCon, Kamikaze. I went to, the only one I've been to is a KublaCon up in...
I'm jealous. I want to go to that one.
Yeah. So that was my first one for gaming. And similar setup, it sounds like. They booked pretty much the first three floors of a hotel, and what I love was that, like, it's much more welcoming. So, like, out of everyone in the Geeksy What Network, I'm the least proficient when it comes to board games, because I really didn't start playing until I joined the network. Mm-hmm. And, like, what I really loved about these conventions and the tabletop community in general, it's like, it's much more welcoming, because everyone at these conventions, they're just there to play, even if you've never seen the game before. They're just like, yeah, come on, try it out.
And they want to get more players.
Yeah, exactly.
At least for like the newer games and demos and stuff like that. But I mean, there at some of these conventions too, they do have like cash money tournaments too. Like you can go to them and be like, oh, this is the 40K tournament for Versus, or I mean, I'm dating this podcast a little bit just by saying Versus, but different things like Magic and stuff like that. They
still
have
exists.
Yeah, it just came back. Yeah. And so it's like some of those conventions get pretty crazy. I think the only gaming exclusive con I ever went to was Gen Con SoCal when it was out here for like a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that dates it right there. Like that's...
90s?
Yeah, like late 90s maybe. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, but like they only had it at like one, maybe 2 years, and then like, no, we're just going to do indie. Never mind. And but no, it was a lot less flash and a lot more like, but here's the games. Here's just a ton of games. If you want to play, if you want to buy, they're all here. Like this is... It was a pretty cool experience, but it was not what I was used to, because my first convention I ever gone to was San Diego Comic-Con. So,
must have been a huge change.
Yeah.
Overwhelming at all.
Yeah, my expectations were like, oh, this is what a convention should look like. I'm like, oh, okay. And then everything else sets and that has been like, okay, so just, you know, adjust per size.
Right, and SDCC is huge. I think they got, what was it, over 120,000 people this year, somewhere along those lines.
Felt like it.
It was huge. We've gone there for the last couple of years, and I have, aside from a small thing that happened this year, it's been pretty great. We've been in the board game room. They invited us. We didn't even have to buy a table. That's just like, hey, awesome. Come play. Yeah, it's pretty cool how they have that set up. But almost nobody knows about the board game room there. Like, you'll get people there, like, they see board game in the program, and they go, oh, okay, we're going there. But most of the people are there for the vendor hall floor. They go to Hall H so they can see all the new things that are coming.
I've never been a fan of Hall. Sitting in that line, I was like, I can't do it.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Every year that we've gone, I bring a few volunteers with me. I say a few. It's like four or five. And two of them will camp out overnight for Hall H on Saturday because that's their favorite day where things are getting announced. And they've done this every time we've gone, which I guess is only two times at this point, so I could have just said twice.
But every time, that's still 100%
every
of the time.
Time.
Yeah, every time.
It's a lot of times.
Yeah, the it's weird because that mezzanine level, unless you know how to get there, is just tucked away. Like, you go to the back, you go up your escalators or down your escalators, depending on where you're coming from, and it's just this like little pocket level that not a lot of people know about. And right. It's just like, and like you said, unless you're going to panels upstairs and you're like, oh, on the way I bump into this, you're not going to know about it unless you're, like you said, you see in the program.
Uh-huh. I'm really trying to visualize where this is because, okay, not gonna lie, I wasn't sober for a lot of Comic Con this year, but
that's
like,
fair.
Yeah. But like, where is it? Like, you enter
it's Hall C,
Hall C
through
through
E, I think, right?
It's literally like it's not the second. It's a middle. It's like the mezzanine.
Yeah.
It's a mezzanine level. So it's like if you go to the back end of the convention and you in the back kind of like the halfway point, there's a set of escalators that go up. And then you're at the mezzanine level. There's kind of a small food court area, and that's where the majority of the cosplay group set up. So you'll see like the Doctor Who cosplayers and the Star Wars cosplayers. It's also the same area you'll see the live action battles where have the...
Oh, okay, SCA. Okay. Now I know where it is. Yeah, yeah.
So that tier, but then off to the sides, there's more halls. Mm-hmm. And back in those halls is where you have all the board games set up. So you have people playing hours upon hours of D&D. You have people running demos from board games. You have like just all kinds of gaming happens on that tier.
Man, card games like Pokemon.
Yeah,
too.
Pokemon.
Magic.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, I went to the wrong stuff this year. Anyway, go.
The Society for Creative Anachronism. Those are the people that are fighting out there.
Is that what they?
Yeah, those are all the, I did see that. That was cool.
They actually will. They're a draw. Like, people will hear about them on the floor because they'll see people walking in their awesome cosplay.
Yeah,
like,
plate armor.
Come
yeah.
check us out. So when they go to see them, that'll let them know, oh, hey, there is more back here. Maybe I should look.
Yeah, a lot of the line for Ballroom 20, like, zigzags all around there. And also the exit for Ballrooms A, B, and C, those also wrap around back there. And that's how you can, a lot of people just hear the clanging from the battling and they're like, oh, what is that? Like,
I mean, that's how I found it. Those guys were going at it too.
Oh yeah. They're going full out. And I'm glad they've gotten to the point where they rope off the area now. And so, yeah.
Yeah. It's become a huge draw. So San Diego Comic-Con, it's great. For the most part, I wish they would advertise for us more. I wish they put up some signage letting people know where we are and how to get to us, because like you mentioned the mezzanine level, and just like you guys, you're like, where's that?
Yeah.
No, and it would have been a nice break from all the chaos that
Absolutely.
Was going around. Like,
I spend 10 minutes on the floor and I feel claustrophobic.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just doing that lap like the first day, I'm like, oh my God, this is
right.
This is great, but it's so much.
Well, the good thing, it's not that it's a sign for that, but a good thing is the mezzanine level is a great place to kind of relax for a second. Like aside from, I know some people go into a small panel just and sit in the back to relax, but the mezzanine level is just like, aside from the food court, you go into these game rooms and like the AC's cranked and people are just chilling, playing games. It's really kind of cool, mellow vibe. I mean, you still get some power gamers, but that's going to happen in any kind of like large gathering of nerds. No. So
any game like that.
But no, it's a good place to just kind of like, oh, I want to take a break from the floor. It's a really chill area. Definitely recommend checking it out.
Right. Yeah. But you compare that to something like Strategicon, the one at Hilton LAX, that gets maybe 2,000 people. The difference is everyone there is dedicated to games.
Yeah.
It's almost entirely games. And there are some video games also, which I wouldn't say are out of place there, but they have one room. But other than that, it's a great con. They do it three times a year. Mm-hmm. They do it on a holiday weekend. So I think it's got President's Day, Labor Day, and Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And I love it. We've been almost every time. The only times that we didn't go is when they experimented with no longer having people in the foyer. And we're like, nope, we're not going to go if we're not in the foyer.
They're like, I got to stop like how, before they go in. Like, it's like they come right to me.
It's like, no, they're paying for a table and a space. That's what I felt like would have
Yeah.
What's going on, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like, if you're going to charge us this much money, then we want the foot traffic for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to be clear, though, he still paid for the spot in the foyer.
Oh, I thought you didn't pay for it. Okay.
Oh, no. Okay. We didn't pay for San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay, gotcha.
We also didn't pay for Kamikaze and WonderCon. We got invited to all those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kamikaze is how I found out about this.
Yeah.
Have you always been, like, attracted to, like, board games or anything nerdy, anything like that, or...
Nerdy, yes. I've always loved nerdy things. I didn't really get into board games until a good friend of mine, hi Juan, he and his girlfriend Chelsea really got me into board games, and that was probably in 2013, I want to say. It was him that initially had the conversation with me about making a board game, and then I ran with it.
Well, thanks to Juan, then, yeah.
What games kind of with them did kind of cut your teeth on, like, the more in-depth board games? Because we all played, like, you know, Monopoly and Sorry and all those ones as
kids.
Yeah. But, no. But like, what started you on this, the more, I don't know how to refer to it, but just, like, the
hobby
more...
Hobby
gaming, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lords of Waterdeep, Takenoko, Ticket to Ride... They really got me into the entry-level games, and I had never played any of these before, and it really opened my eyes. It's like, oh, I thought that's all there was Sorry and Monopoly and things like that. And that's all that people think about when I say, oh, yeah, I make board games. They go, oh, like Monopoly? No, not like Monopoly. Let me tell you what it's like. Yeah. And it gives you a whole new outlook. You see everything a little bit differently when you start thinking about game theory. Like, oh, that doesn't work. That election, I can totally see how that could have gone differently. Or if this, and this had happened. If somebody just hit their points.
Mm-hmm. See, that's one thing I'm curious about. Because like I said, before I joined Geek Say What, like, I was the same way. I'm like, what, shoots and ladders, that's all I thought.
Casual gaming, kids gaming.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're approaching something like this, which was, by the way, it was both, I thought it was complex but not overwhelming to the point where I couldn't play it. Like, I remember, like, at Kamikaze, right? I remember at Kamikaze, I was nervous at first, but, like, once you got that rhythm going, I thought this was, like, super accessible. I had a lot of fun playing it, and a lot of that was coming back in our little refresher last night when we were playing the game.
Yeah.
Although, I will say they didn't adapt the voices as much as they could have. They were just a little more, they're just more like casual evil. Like, they weren't like overlords evil. So
what?
I know that I wanted to take points away, but it wasn't my house, so I couldn't house rule it.
That's fair. I would have taken points away. Even if it's not my house, I'm always the dungeon master of Overlords of Infamy.
Yeah. Fair point.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, okay. I wanted to ask this, like, what's, when you're designing something like this, because again, all of this is like so fairly new to me. When you start to design something like this, what's the first step? Are you just starting with like verbs? Like, what am I doing in this game? Or is it starting with a story? Is it starting with?
I'm a big theme guy. Okay, I like theme a lot.
Okay.
So, the whole theme that I came up with for this game is, hey, what if you're a bad guy who thinks that you're doing these absolutely nefarious things, but what you're doing is, stealing candy from babies. Or something like that.
I got that card yesterday.
He did.
That one's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Blanket the Region with Glitter is another one as well.
See, that's fucked up, dude.
Yeah, that's really messed up. I started with those ideas, and like the first cards I came up with are the making everyone's socks slightly damp, the throttling internet speeds to 56K, dividing by zero, that kind of thing. So I really started with just, let's make this really silly. But then as it evolved, I'm like, okay, well, maybe you need to start with the silly things and then transition into meaner things and then transition into global thermonuclear war or something along those lines, which is a card that immediately ends the game if you play it.
Oh, so okay. We got to get that far again.
It's a domination level plot. So you got to be a level 5 infamy to get to it.
Right.
See, like, I expect a War Games reference in there. Like, the only way to win is not to play.
Actually, the reference on the card is perhaps you like a nice game of chess.
Oh, my God.
My nerd game is strong.
Well done. Well, I applaud you. Yeah, no, that's how I started with this.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, I played a lot of Lords of Waterdeep and I played Settlers of Catan and things along those lines. I think the hardest game that I tried a foyer or a foyer that I tried to feel out when I was at that point was Game of Thrones, the board game, not the card game.
Which I do you remember which? Because there's
it's the one that makes you lose friendships.
Well, that's Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
There's a couple different card games, board games. Do you remember
it's specifically Game of Thrones, the board game. Like that's the title.
Okay.
If I could help you remember, it's got a tracker for the White Walkers on top, and every so often something that you do will trigger that to move, and when it hits a certain point, then something happens.
Gotcha. I'm thinking was like the Battle for Westeros. Since there's so many, I'm probably not going to remember it, but I'm sorry, go on.
No, now you're having me second guess. Anyway, I played that, and that's actually where I got the mechanic for world events. The world events trigger after a certain amount of world tension has built up from harvesting resources, recruiting lackeys, completing your plots. When it gets to 10, you flip over a world event. And I got that idea from seeing the White Walker tracker in the Game of Thrones board game. I got the idea for collecting resources to complete your nefarious plots from Lords of Waterdeep, which you're collecting four different types of, I think there's a warrior, there's a wizard, there's a cleric, and assassin. So they're these different colored cubes. And you'd use those, you need to collect a certain amount of those to complete whatever quest you're working on or whatever it might be. So I got that idea for the cards. And then from Settlers of Catan, I just liked the hexagon shape. I thought it worked really well.
Yeah.
So I used the hexagons for this game. And I also, with a fantastic suggestion from one of those friends, Chelsea, that I mentioned, she's told me this game needs a hero that torments the overlords. Because prior to that, we didn't have one. And that idea was based off of the robber from Catan.
Yeah, Ken used the hero to his advantage to make JPG and I fight it out.
I was very clear about the hero. I didn't put the hero directly in either one of your paths. I moved him away from me. You guys moved him into each other, okay? You guys forced him on each other.
I'm just going to leave this knife in the middle of the room. You two figure it out.
Yeah, I just want the knife on the other side of the room away from me is all I wanted to do.
So you're Jerry Springer, but you're giving weapons to the crew, or the cast, rather. Here's a knife. Do something with the knife.
It was a smart move, I got to say.
I was Tyrion de Bergerac, sir.
Oh, I like the voice. Well done.
That's again, you got to take hold of it. If you're going to play the villain, you got to get that voice in there.
Yeah, I usually do Lord Aether, and I do something. I don't know. I can't do it on the spot, but I've got a British voice, and he's like this evil overlord, and he's always monologuing. I guess I can do it on the spot.
Yeah, there you go.
Not
right.
Bad. I like it.
I was waffles. So
did you bark?
I did not.
Because that happens way more often than you think it does. It's just, okay, read your plot, Waffles. All right, now really read it.
See, now I should have done that. You guys would have been so sick of me at the end of that game.
Well, no, because what would have happened was because that house is currently infested with puppies, you would have set them off. That's what would have happened.
No, but that was actually like a fun part of the game that like I would not have like figured that out like had we just opened it up and started playing. But when we played with you at Kamikaze, like I was playing with like a bunch of other strangers, and like everyone just got into it. Like it was like a really fun part of the game.
I love
it. What's your best evil voice? And I think everyone just seems to go like sort of British. I don't know why that is.
Because British people make the best villains.
I would agree. I think it's just because it depends on like the age, but like if you're a Star Wars kid, like all the Empire's British. They're all so crisp and like evacuate. In a time of victory, and like my brain just goes that way, and like, and you look at movies like Dirty Dozen, where like, oh, the one good guy who gets away, the American, and all the Brits get caught, like, oh, or spoilers for Dirty Dozen,
damn it,
or no, is it Dirty Dozen or no, it's Dirty Dozen,
a movie that's decades,
for ruining it for everybody, but it's like the good guy is the American, so you don't associate that, although I don't know, maybe some presidents you might think are just huge idiots and they're bad guys.
Is it different in the other like England? Do they think the American like when they do this, like go into villain mode, do they go American?
I don't know. I've actually heard that they still do the British voice there because even they think that they're evil. I don't I couldn't tell you for sure, though. I've only been there for a couple of weeks one time. But
yeah. Also, Bond would be the same way, too.
Yeah, I was just about to say, James
that's
Bond.
That's a big one, yeah.
There's
yeah,
lots of ones where right. it's like, and also, you want a competent villain, and that voice exudes competency. Really I gotta does. Say, it's like, the I'm sorry, the accent. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Confidence, at the very least.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when you get the American voice, you get stuttering like I do every now and again.
Well, I'm not sure, sir, but we can probably make it out of here alive.
You're like, kind of just slipped into Morty there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, Rick. We should probably just...
it's a goddamn it, Morty.
But we got to get back to Jessica. I really want...
I hate to bring it to you, Morty, but Jessica's dead.
What? What do you mean she's dead? Can you clone her? Can you bring... Okay, we're just going off on a tangent. Yeah.
I love Rick and Morty. This season is so dark.
Wait,
so dark.
Wait, Ken, you're cut up, right?
I'm trying to remember the
Citadel
last...
Citadel of Mortys is the
yeah,
last
Yeah, Citadel of Mortys last... No,
or
no, no.
Rick's, whatever.
The no. Ricklantis.
Yes, Ricklantis was the last episode.
Yeah.
But it's all on the Citadel or the rebuilding of it or
that
whatever.
Was so dark.
I was just like, they tackled a bunch of issues in this.
They really did.
Yeah, I was just like, that's it's such brutality and
it's
stuff.
Such a smart show.
Yeah.
And you don't think that going into it. Like, you watch the first episode, you go, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, it's and then drunk Doc Brown and Marty. Yeah. Yeah.
I was actually really turned off during the first few episodes because just listening to Rick burping all the time and always having that little bit of vomit on his soul patch or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. That almost turned me off from the episodes, from the show. But the rest of the episode was just so funny. Eventually it became background noise.
Yeah.
That seems to be common because I remember you and JPG had like a similar hang up.
My thing was initially the animation is more of the current generation of we can make it super simple so it's easy to animate and I don't know if it's an age thing or what, but it doesn't gel well for me. Like Adventure Time and even Steven Universe, which I actually love now, because the animation style was so simple at first glance, I'm just kind of like, no, I'll keep my Batman animated series. I'll keep my Young Justice. I'll keep the Korra, you know, Avatar The Last Airbender. These shows that, you know, I can see the time and effort that's put into these designs. And they definitely have a lot of that in Rick and Morty and some in... Rebecca Sugar Show, Steven Universe. But on the offset, I was just like, no, it's not for me. But then also the fact that Dan Harmon did it, and I'm a huge Community fan. Like, and that I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. And I got into it, and I was happy that I did.
So you're a fan of large groups of people or the show Community? I'm just curious.
The show Community.
My humor, ladies and gentlemen, it's terrible. It's really bad.
No, it's okay.
Hey, I got it.
It took me a second. I'm like, what did I say? What threw me off? No, yeah. No, I love the show Community. Yeah. I love Troy and Abed, like the entire...
In the morning or all the time?
Troy and Abed, nights.
Oh, gosh. You know, Dan Harmon's fantastic, and I actually watched a documentary about him when he was... the Harmontown. I can't remember. I guess that was the name of the documentary, wasn't it? Or something along those lines.
I know there's one. There's like, I think that's the name of the documentary. And it also happens to be the name of his podcast too. Yeah.
Right. His podcast and animated show now. Except that's Harmon Quest.
Yeah, it's Harmon Quest on CISO.
CISO, yeah.
Right. I like a lot of the things, not everything, but I like a lot of the things that Dan Harmon does. Community was definitely one of them. That documentary was really interesting to me.
Since we kind of touched on gaming, one thing too that I brought up during the Dark Dungeons episode is Dan Harmon and his friends were part of the Dead Alewives that first did that D&D sketch of like...
That one I'm not...
Where are the Cheetos?
Oh, that's
is
what...
Is Mountain Dew?
Yes, you could have some Mountain Dew. Just go get it.
Yeah.
That's actually me. I DM for five groups of people. I'm not even kidding. I'm running five concurrent campaigns right now. I have one that's
sounds
weekly.
That sounds exhausting.
No, it's fantastic. Oh, okay. I love it. I love being a DM.
Oh, okay.
Which systems?
Pathfinder for four of them.
Okay.
Fifth edition for one of them. And, oh, God. Okay, so I say I'm running for five groups. My weekly group that does Pathfinder, they're getting kind of up there in levels. I've killed off a few of them already. Oops. And they're nearing level 20, which doesn't have to be the end of the game, but they're nearing the end of the story that I've written for them. And then a lot of the seeds that they sowed at the very beginning of their adventure are starting to,
come
to fruition. Thank you. Sometimes I start sentences and can't remember where they're going.
Yeah, you gotta find
that
the
happens
path.
A lot on this show, so don't worry.
Yeah. All right, maybe it's the beer. so they're Okay, I went to Gen Con, which was fantastic, by the way. Mm-hmm. Huge, exhausting, fantastic.
That's the one in Indiana.
Indianapolis. Yeah. Not my favorite board game convention, believe it or not.
Oh. But
my favorite is Origins, but we'll get back to that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Have you been to Gamma?
I have not been to Gamma yet, but I want to.
Gamma. I only went one time, and as a retailer, so just like the swag that we went home with was just ridiculous.
Huge. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
That's
it's,
fantastic.
And but it was
well,
so
it's
much,
all about the retailers at
yeah.
that point.
And but it was also so amazing to be like people are just like, oh, have you seen these terrain walls? You know that we've made like here, just take a handful, just take them all. And then, like
Dwarven Forge.
I don't even remember. Like I just have.
I can't speak highly enough about Dwarven Forge.
Yeah,
it's incredible. The terrain, the detail. Stephen Picorni, or Stefan Picorni, excuse me, is brilliant. Like he's got a master in various types of art, and he's the one that's at the helm of this. He designs these pieces before they mass produce them, and then he has these videos online where he shows you how to paint them. It's incredible.
Yeah, and like just learning to dry brush just alters the piece from what you think in your head of just this, like, oh no, now it looks like an actual wall.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't take that much time, but like, it seems like such a monumental thing to like, oh, I'm going to paint all these miniatures and like, oh God. But if you can get into it, like it can go pretty quick. Like you can do it while you're watching a TV show and you're just like, oh yeah, Rick and Morty's awesome. And painting and these pieces come out and you're like, well, again, this is, we're going to reference Dark Dungeon a couple times here. But so when they set up their D&D, like it's this amazing montage of like a dungeon layout and like they put all the stuff down and like for all the campaigns like I've run, like we have like, here's a map and here's some minis, but this was like, they had the full dungeon laid out, sprawling across, like you know.
I wish our game nights were that coordinated.
Oh, yeah.
That was incredible.
Do you want me to DM for you sometime?
Because we could do that.
I play music. I bring terrain. I have sound effects. I do voices for everyone. I'm happy to DM for you guys sometime. I love doing it.
Good God. Okay, we'll drive out to you, though.
Okay, that's like, fair. Yeah, no two-hour drives.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, there's this new app I found. My fiance found it. The Atmosphere app. And so you can bring in sounds, and then you can just bring in like, oh, now I want footsteps, and now I'm
not familiar with that one.
I'll show it to you after the.
Please
after
do.
The, it's
I'm
ridiculous.
Familiar with Sirenscape or Sirenscape. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. Sirenscape.
I go with siren, considering you think of the mystical creature. But
what I thought is, but I've also heard other people pronounce it differently. So whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's fantastic, and it does a lot of that. The only thing I dislike about that app, Sirenscape, whatever.
We'll forgive
you. One, it's got a monthly fee, which I could completely understand. If it was a one-time fee, I think I would be more into it.
Mm-hmm.
If they even had the option of, okay, you could pay one time and have it forever, or you can pay monthly and only use it when you want to. I would like that.
Yeah.
The only other thing I dislike is I run it off of one of my tablets.
Mm-hmm.
I like using music that the app doesn't have. So I want that music playing in the background while I use... the footstep sound or a lightning crash or something along those lines from Sirenscape, because they did a fantastic job with those, but it doesn't always provide the music that I want.
Gotcha.
So if I could play both at once, that would be fantastic.
Essentially, you need to have a splitter at that point running two soundboards. Sorry, folks. Two soundboards into one input. That way you could just overlay one on top of the other. You have your music from a separate laptop or...
That's too much work. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's way too much work.
I'm sitting in a sound booth, so that's why my brain's like, oh, yeah, you could just do this.
I mean, we've messed around with like sound effects and like video clips before on this show, but never anything like that.
Yeah. Well, we could. It's just a matter of time and time, really. That's,
yeah.
And this is a weekly thing on top of our full-time jobs and a second half part-time job. And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is all for you, folks.
It's free. No complaints. No.
Traditionally, rather than use the soundboard, I've got a tablet and I have a Bluetooth speaker, which more often than not is my Amazon Echo. And I'll just have that hooked up.
That works.
Sitting there. And it's like, all right, this is right in the middle of the room. Here's your music.
As long as no one in the party's named Alexa, you're fine.
Yeah, I made a rule that can't happen. So.
No friends named Alexa.
No, we had somebody named Alex, and that would set it off. So, sorry, I pulled away from the mic. We had a friend named Alex that would set that off, and I started... Well, this is something that I wanted to do anyway, and I started doing was calling everybody by their character names rather than their real names. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we start, it's no longer, oh, hey, what's up? What's up, Eric? What's up, James? No, it's what's up, Rogar? What's up, Pentha? Things like that, so...
No, but that kind of enthusiasm just adds to the game. Like,
I
think Ken and I struggle to like find time to like set up something like that.
We've had a Edge of Empire Star Wars RPG one on hold for
a year and a half at least.
Well, yeah, a year and a half for you. I've only been brought into about six months, and just like, oh no, here's all the stuff. We studied it. We just have to find a way to organize seven people at one time, and that's.
We kill them off. I'm just saying, kill them off.
Yeah,
my weekly group was up to 11 people.
Oh God, no!
For a while.
Oh God, no. God.
Balancing encounters was a lot of fun.
But they show. But they actually showed up.
They showed up, and that's been going on since April of 2016. Almost every week. There's only been a few weeks that we've missed that. That's been fantastic. And all of those people, every single one of them, except for one, had never played RPGs before. Or if they'd played, it's been one session. And it all came up when I was on, a bunch of us went on a trip to San Francisco for a bachelor party for our buddy. And we're like, you know what? We should get John to play D&D with us. This was the guy who was getting married. It's like, I wonder if he'd be into that. And the guy I was saying it to was somebody who'd played one session with me before. That's it. And he's like, oh, well, we can ask him, see if he'd be down for it. I don't think he will be. I'm like, yeah, I don't think he will be either. He seems a little bit too cool for that kind of thing. Likes a lot of sports and all that. I like sports, but whatever. So we floated the idea to him. He's like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Oh, that was easy. All right. And he is one of the deepest role players in that group at this point. It's fantastic. He loves it. It got to the point where they started asking me. We were like, okay, we'll do this once a month. And they're like, can we start doing this like twice a month or every week? I'm like, I'll see if I can write that fast. Because I traditionally don't use modules. I write my own stuff.
Yeah. No, I think we, like Jason and I, are working on a few different things. We're doing a module just to get everyone kind of, okay, everyone get here on the same page, and from there we're going to step forward into other stuff because we have, you know, seeds planted in the existing module, but just so we can have, okay, how do we work all these people together? Let's just start with a preset thing, easy way in, and then we go from there.
Yeah.
I feel like nowadays, especially within our group, it's a lot easier to get people into that type of gaming. It's just the consistency.
Well,
I feel like a lot of people are very open to it if you just ask them.
Well, we're getting away from the age of dark dungeons.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, well, that's the other thing, too. Like, the age of stuff like, I mean, it started with Nerdist, but then Geek & Sundry has done a great job of like, mm-hmm. Oh, do you like board games? Well, we're going to make a deal with Target so that all these board games we're going to focus on each month are going to be available for you in Target. So you can go to Target and pick up Settlers of Catan and then Catan Star Trek if you want. I can't think of, why is that name? One of them just left my brain completely.
Well, Star Trek Catan would never have been made if it wasn't for the deal with Target. Target specifically asked for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting. Yeah, and so like, but games like that, and it's Cards Against Humanity, which is not
they're
a
great
game,
people.
You wouldn't think, oh yeah, that's going to be in a Target, but it's in Target all thanks to that same deal.
And it's got a whole end cap. Last time I saw
Ticket to Ride, I think
fantastic
is in there as well. And
still
these,
one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's all these, but introductory games are Pandemic.
Sushi Go, Pandemic, Roll for It. That's a good game, too, for entry level. One of my favorite entry level games that I have seen at Target, I'm pretty sure, Love Letter.
Yeah, yes. They have Batman Love Letter as well.
Yeah, yeah.
They have, they've done different variants of that. So.
What?
Well, that's something I'm curious about. You jumped into this business not too long ago. Like, I come from a different business where I'm in sales and it's very cutthroat. I don't know what the community is like when it comes to board games. Is it?
Are you talking about the developer community?
Sure.
Probably the most welcoming community I've ever been a part of.
See,
every single indie developer wants you to succeed because that only prolongs the life of this current renaissance of board games, which means they get to keep making games.
I would kill to be in that kind of environment.
It's wonderful. I would not have ever made this game if it wasn't for the advice and the help of all of these amazing designers.
And the creation of Kickstarter.
Kickstarter's huge.
Crowdfunding games through like, oh, you know what? The idea of like, oh, I have to make a game, package it, fully design it, and then sell that to a game. Like, I have to sell this to Parker Brothers. Like, that, we're not there. That's not how things are done right now.
Gatekeepers are gone.
Yeah. And so it's like, but it's also interesting to see, too, like, games or game houses like IDW Games and Cryptozoic, they're also going through there. We were discussing this last night. Like, Kickstarter, because you can get a a guaranteed audience for a game before it's even out, it's allowing more and more games to be made. Like, just stuff that, like, oh, you know, we're pretty sure there's a following for Ninja Turtles. They may be popular, but IDW Games is like, no, this is based on the comics. Let's push it forward and let's see what the crowd thinks. And if they can't get it, then that doesn't get made.
Yeah. Did you have to go through like several different versions of this game before it went to Kickstarter?
Yeah, this is version 12.
This is 12.
Yeah. Oh, and that we were up to 10 before we went to Kickstarter. And I think of it like in terms of software version numbers, like every time that you make a huge change to it or add a big element to it, you increase the version number. When I say version 12, it's like we went through the original design phase where I made the pieces from hand and I very poorly drew and colored in on poster board and things like that. And like if you guys ever see the art book, which fortunately I forgot to bring.
It's there on the table, actually.
The art book? Oh, this is the rule
book. This is the rule
book. Oh, in the box, there's the art book, too.
Oh, is there?
Well, not that it helps for an audio.
Your audience can't hear it, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, this looks great. Wish you could all see it.
I'm surprised it's hardcover and like it's... No, I'm sorry, folks, it's not.
Anyway.
It's good, what's with this pornographic material in the middle?
Yeah. Oh, that's the expansion.
Oh, yeah. No, the back page actually shows the original prototype. It looks nothing like it does now.
Is it just like a piece of like cardboard and
sitting inside of they called it top loaders, I think. It's basically like a hardcover poster frame that's just clear plastic.
Oh, okay.
And it think a hard sleeve for like a Magic card or something like that that you really want to protect on a much larger scale.
Oh, okay.
And so I just slid it into that because I used to be big into HeroClix.
It's hilarious that you say that because
oh my god, Ken,
I have
HeroClix.
Way too many HeroClix.
I can't do it anymore. It's too expensive.
It's expensive, but like I kind of just pick and choose my characters. But I at my shop we run tournaments, and so we just had a bunch of top loaders loaded up with maps. Just that way, it's like, hey, it holds it down, and we just like, hey, just trade it out that way. It's a lot easier than trying to roll it out and oh, put your phone on that side and put this on that side, and like, no, just
protects it from spills and
yep,
yeah. But shout out to Brave New World in Newhall, California. That's where I learned how to play publicly. Like, I got into the game again because my buddy Juan, the one who set me on the path of making this, he got me into HeroClix. And then we started playing at our FLGS, and they did that there, and I made it a huge community of friends just from playing there.
Was that before the crash or after? Like after so
the crash.
So WizKids. WizKids was originally a division of Tops.
Yeah.
And so they were going for a good long while, and then Tops essentially closed down that division, so to speak. And I believe Tops still went on for a little while longer, but they sold WizKids off to NECA. And then it was probably at least a year or so gap. And
I
then
think it's longer than that.
Yeah, it's probably a lot longer, but I just want to be on the vague side because I can't remember.
Sure.
And then they came back strong with like a NECA put a lot of money into it. We got a new Avengers set. It was a big return to force. A lot of things changed. There's a lot of good updates.
Production values.
And those have gone up and down, but yeah, they've definitely been more on the upside and... It's been a really good renaissance of HeroClix, but they've gotten a bit quick. Like, they're just like, here's another set. It's like, dude.
It becomes hard to sell.
I feel like that tends to happen with any, well, even just action figure lines. Like, anything like that, it just comes out. They need that.
Sure.
That quick buck.
That's their business model because they're not cheap to make. Like, are nice figures, and they come pre-painted. That's not cheap.
That's the biggest selling point for me when I started was pre-painted miniatures. Mm-hmm. So even if I don't care about the game, I still have a miniature Spider-Man. So if the time comes where I want to play a hero-based RPG, oh, I've got a Spider-Man. And if I want to, I've got this other, you know, rookie, like, no-name character that I can repaint into my own character. And so having pre-painted miniatures, just open the box and you're ready to go. They had me sold from the word go there.
Yeah, and then I don't even play the game. I just like the figurines. I have a few of them. Thank God I never got really deep into collecting them.
Yeah, I got some of my friends really deep into collecting them, they hang that over my head still. They're like, you know how much money I invested in this? And then you stopped and you sold all of your HeroClix like in one fell swoop. I'm like, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, see, that's where I've been good. I've stopped collecting stuff. It's like if I buy something now, it's something like I really, really like. I don't know if you have anything like that you've been collecting.
I collect.
Oh, yeah? What do you collect?
Collections.
No, I obsessively collect things. If I get started with something, I just have to have more.
David lives in a warehouse. It's just collections.
I have something like 350 board games.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I think that puts our friend Andrew to shame.
It might. What are they predominantly? Are they predominantly indie games? Are they more?
I definitely like promoting indie games. Yeah. I like playing indie games because I think the things that you find in an indie game traditionally are things that you won't find in a mainstream game. And I
they
like
have to cater to the masses, basically.
Right. So you go through Hasbro through Mattel or Milton Bradley. I don't know if they're still around.
Parker Brothers.
Parker Brothers. There you go. It was originally Milton Bradley.
Yeah.
That made Monopoly. Yeah. They need to appeal to a large audience. When these indie games, they make the games that they want to play and they find a niche crowd that wants to play it with them, which is one of the fantastic things about Kickstarter. And I think that the best use of Kickstarter is for board games. And I think something like my numbers are probably totally off here because I heard it in passing, but I think 11% of the projects that are on Kickstarter are board games.
I believe
Oh, wow. That's a pretty big chunk.
I've seen, it's interesting too to see, like, I have friends who have attempted Kickstarters and like where their ideas come from as far as like, oh, this is my $1 tier. It's like, no, like the cost on stuff, like, oh, the $1 tier, you're going to get a sticker and a letter in the mail. I'm like, okay.
No.
It's like, no, you've already, like, You've lost money.
Yeah.
Like, it's you, because you've already, like, the postage alone for all those is how much. And then you're making a sticker and they don't think about all the stuff that adds up. And it's like, it's one thing, it's really kind of having, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, I playtest for Cryptozoic sometimes.
Okay.
And so, like, listening, watching people on the boards being like, oh, they should have just done this, they should have made this. I'm like, trust me, those versions were there. Like, a lot of ideas go through all this stuff, but the actual cost for these things is, you have no idea. Like, the amount of time it would take to make, you know, these new figures with these sculpts and these things. A lot of people just see just the surface, like, well, I want it in my box and I want that. Like, that's all I want. Like, no, like, so in case of your game, like, you've got all these individual cut little resources.
Yep.
And those are all individual shapes.
Yep.
Like, it's not like I mean, the Ameritrash game is a term of, like, you know, just cardboard pop-outs of, like, oh, they're all round circles. Like, no, these are individually cut wooden pieces. Like, that's not inexpensive. That's going to add up super quick. And they're painted.
It does, yeah. But yeah. Honestly, we're not making a lot of money on this game. We're charging just what we need to charge for it, which, yeah, you could point out why that's a mistake to me at some point other time when I'm crying. But I wanted to make a game that I would want to buy. If I saw someone playing this game, this is what I want to have in my collection. That's what I wanted to make for people.
Yeah.
This is something that I love, and I want other people to be able to see that.
And that's something you actually can tell when you're playing this game, like the designs, and like, I actually really appreciate that you have those like cut pieces that are painted, like Ken was saying, like those little other games where it's just like a circle cut out with some cheap little drawing on it.
Theater of the Mind definitely works, though.
Yeah, that it adds so much value to the game. Like, you feel like you're playing something with a little bit more, like, I don't know if prestige is the right word, but, like, it seems like a
quality.
Bigger deal. Yeah, quality. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But, and it all adds up, just like you said. It definitely gets more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it to us.
Yeah.
One of the things that we added to the game that was a little bit more expensive, but was important, was each of the different colored sets of meeples. So for those who don't know, as an evil overlord, you have lackeys. You have six lackeys in whichever color you chose at the beginning of the game. Well, each color of lackeys is a different shape. So if you're colorblind, you can tell them apart. One of our founders is colorblind, and we're like, you know what, this is important. There's quite a lot more colorblind people out there than you'd think. Something like 7% of the population.
Even if they're just color deficient, like they're not completely like, oh, I see whites and black and gray. Like, no, they're just like, oh, I don't see reds that easily, so I can't tell that. Yeah.
And that just goes back to what you were saying about this gaming community. Like, so welcoming that you want people to play. You want people to feel included. Like, so little touches like that, I love that.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, Marcus, what you were saying, Marcus is one of the founders of Obscure Reference with us, and he's red-green colorblind. So he could see blues and yellows fine, which is the other major one. But red-green is the most prevalent type of color blindness. So when he was playing the game with us, he was having trouble finding his pieces on the green board. And we're like, oh, maybe you should play with the blue ones for now, but let's see what we can do for you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What version of the game was that?
Oh, that was way back in the beginning. Marcus actually lives in Washington now. He works for Bungie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to talk to him. We need some Destiny 2 codes. So we'll get on the phone with him.
It's really fun. Okay, so I played Destiny 1 for a couple of years. I played since launch. I loved it. My only problem was I ran out of content so quick. Like, which was okay, because it meant I could go play other games.
Mm-hmm.
But I always felt a little bit wanting.
Was it like a 40-hour type of game?
Way less.
Way less. Oh, for Destiny. Yeah. Wow, I wouldn't
have guessed. Yeah, Destiny, they even, like, that's one of the things, like, they had a really large DLC campaign after the fact.
Right, which were good, but yeah, still short.
Yeah, but after the first launch, people were like, wait, that's it? It's like, oh, now it's just grinding continuously with my friends, maybe.
Oh, and they kind of like try to extend it that way, as opposed to
that's all you had to extend it with. It was just repeated grinding, and then
story
like,
wasn't there, which was sad. Well, there was story. I take that back, but the story was in the form of grimoire cards, what they called. So, as you completed certain accomplishments in game, or if you found something that was hidden, you'd get something on your screen that says, "Oh, grimoire card attained," and you have to go to Bungie's website. Log in with your PSN name or your Xbox name, and it'll show you which grimoire cards you've collected, and that's where the story was. There was almost no story in Destiny 1, which was my biggest complaint.
So it was just text on these cards? That was it? That was the entire story?
It was text and a small picture, and you had to go online outside of the game to be able to read it.
Yeah.
And it was a huge mistake.
That's depressing.
Destiny 2 launched with more content and more story than all of Destiny 1 plus all of the expansion packs. It launched with more story. I've been having a lot of fun. I think they did a lot of good with Destiny 2, and I'm not just saying that because Marcus works for Bungie. I'm saying I'm having a lot of fun with
this
game.
It was all because of Marcus. Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, Marcus. Yeah, he keeps the servers up, actually. That's what he does.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you're having a laggy connection... No, I'm just kidding. It's not it. Probably check your host or something.
Yeah.
But well, no,
see if your
I'm DS really
is clear and open.
You're are you behind a firewall right now? No.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's Destiny 2. They did a lot of things right, and the story was one of it. The story's been good, and they made a really compelling villain in Destiny 2. I'm really looking forward to whatever the expansions will be. I just tried the raid for the first time, which just came out a couple of days ago. But the villain was great, and that was another gripe I had from Destiny 1. None of the villains meant anything to me, and defeating them did not seem like an accomplishment.
Well, it looks like they listened to... Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed with how much they listened to the community.
Speaking of that, like, what's... I mean, I'm during your Kickstarter campaign, I'm guessing you got a lot of feedback. Like, what was... What was some of, like, the craziest stuff you saw? Or
your art sucks. Oh.
The internet.
Yes. Yes. It's like, no, we actually got quite a bit of feedback. We got constructive criticism, I would say. And it's always great when people tell you, I love your game. I was laughing so much at this card. Mm-hmm. We were laughing all night and we can't wait to play again. Are you going to be at the next convention so I could try it then? Sure. That's fantastic. That warms our heart. We love hearing that. But that doesn't do us any good.
It doesn't help you improve the
game.
It
does not help us improve the game. And I am always looking to improve the game. So please, pile us with praise. We'll take that. But please tell us also what we need to fix in the game.
Give me the salty with the sweet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I wish people like learned how to give actual constructive criticism versus saying like, your art sucks. Or like, this was boring. Like, well, what made it boring? Like,
giving constructive criticism is definitely important, but even more so is being able to take that criticism.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's something I had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew going into it, people are going to be heavily critical of what I was doing.
Sorry to interrupt. Was your background before, like, art related, where you had, like, a lot of...
No.
No. Okay, so you weren't used to taking any sort of, like,
no, I could take criticism. I've done customer service work.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, retail for a long time and then customer service and account management. So taking feedback about how you're doing and then also just taking the good with the bad is kind of par for the course. I worked at, three different coffee shops or something like that, too, as a barista.
But so, when you're creatively constructing something, though, it's different than just like, hey, here's your coffee. It's like, oh, this coffee's bad. Like, okay, fine, I don't care enough. So here's a new coffee. Mm-hmm. But when it's like it's your creation. You're like, oh, what do you think of this thing I just made? Like, oh, it sucks.
Yeah, you're invested.
It's like telling someone that their baby is ugly.
Yeah.
It hurts, but... Well, I guess you can't really do anything about an ugly baby. It hurts, but at least you can go and fix it.
You dress it up.
Right. Introduce him to makeup really young.
He's dressed up as the penguin from Batman.
Oh, gosh. Invest in some bags.
Why does he look like Clayface?
He's just melting? What the fuck? No. But, I mean, dealing... Okay, so jumping into criticism about this, did you kind of quickly develop a thick skin? Was it hard to... deal with it first? Like, what was going through your head?
I would say going into it was easier to take criticism when it was still being filled in, when it was still like that empty coloring book at that point, so to speak. So, yeah, I would say that going into it, I can take criticism because it was very easy to pivot and change something at that point. Here, you need to add this, or your game needs this, or I don't really like this. Can you speed this up? Mm-hmm. It was easy to do that at the beginning. After we had an established game, when I had something that I thought was really good, and then somebody would come to me and said, I really hated this aspect. Why would you do this? And it's like, okay, so one person didn't like it. Maybe it's not the game for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then more people come to you and they start saying it. And we made changes. So yes, it hurts.
Yes.
It hurts. And it's not easy to take that criticism, but you have to. Because, yes, you're making the game that you want to play, but you also need to compromise and make sure that other people are going to want to play it too.
Mm-hmm. And how many was this before, like, there was, like, set art like this, or?
Yes. So... we went through 9 different artists on this game. We settled.
Oh,
with,
wow.
Yeah. We used 3 of them for the final.
How many were, like, at what stage did you bring them in? Like, what version? And, or, like, at what point were they paid? Did you pay? Were they, did it start with, like, just friends who just kind of threw something together for you? Or was it, like...
pizza and good wishes?
Yeah, no.
No. Okay, so the original artwork was a friend wanted to get into making comics. And I met him through a friend. Okay.
Yeah.
Through another friend. And I'm like, hey, this is what we're looking for. I'll pay you $25 per character. This was before I had a lot of the game done. This is when I had just the prototype shell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I need to have characters for this. Mm-hmm. And these are the kind of characters I'm thinking of. I'm like, I want like 8 of them. Give you $25 each. He says, okay.
Yeah.
And he made me those characters. And most of those characters, most of those characters, there's 1 or 2 that aren't made it into the game, the final game, but it's not his original artwork.
Right.
So it's the artwork that he originally gave me, and then he kind of fell off the face of the earth, and he never came back. I kept asking him, I'm like, hey, man, I want to give you more money.
Yeah.
Where are you?
This sounds like indie comics. Trust me.
Yeah, people like your concept. Where are you?
Yeah, and he never came back. But I was able to find people that were able to replicate his work or improve upon his work.
Right.
And if you look through the artwork, you can the art book, I should say, which is available on our website, you can actually see the original artwork that he made and the changes that it went through along the way to get to where it is now.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, we went through a lot of art that way. We went through 9 artists total. You mentioned when did they get paid? Most of them were paid up front.
Okay.
That became a point of contention for one person who suggested that they only be paid if we give them a deposit up front and only pay if we fund on Kickstarter.
Ooh.
So,
artists got to eat too. And
it's their labor is the main thing. It's still time that they have to invest.
That was absolutely what I said to him. And I'm like, what about this? He's like, no, it's okay. Give me $500 now, $4,500 when it funds, and then maybe 0.05% of the game after that, like sales of that. And at the time, that sounded like a good idea to us.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out it was not a good idea. He promised us that he'd work a whole lot more than he did, and he ended up only giving us something like 6% of the artwork that we asked for and still demanded the full price even before the Kickstarter. So we fired him, and then he's like, nope, you still owe me all this money. I'm taking you to court, and it got thrown out. So good.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't finish the job you were commissioned to do, like that's
you'd be
can't get around
missed
that.
Every single deadline. We gave him every chance that that we could, and then we fired him. Some people suggested that that was probably his plan from the beginning, was try to pressure me into paying him instead of going to court.
God damn.
Because he had no legal ground to stand on whatsoever. The judge threw it out pretty quick.
Yeah. Snakes.
No, it's just
industry. God damn.
It's ridiculous. I mean, the same thing can happen in comics.
Yeah.
And that people would just be like, oh, no, I'll work on this project. This was my page rate. This is what I agreed to. And you're like, all right, cool. This is it. And you're like, okay, well, I've paid you this much. Like, where are my pages? Oh, well, you know, I've got this project for this one over here. I'll be right. You know, you'll be within the next month. And you're like, dude, like, I've already paid you. Why am I like, I understand, like, you know, we're working on this little indie comic and you just got a job for Marvel. I understand that, but like,
we still paid you.
Yeah, we still
paid
you.
So give me my money back.
Yeah.
Or give me what I paid for.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, is we did give him money. We gave him $500, and the amount of work that he did translated to maybe $200. Yeah. So he still ended up $300 up on us.
Yeah.
But whatever, that's in the past. It was a very expensive lesson to learn, and we learned it. Actually, in this grand scheme of things, it was a rather cheap lesson to learn.
But, right.
That said, we ended up with three artists that we really liked, and they ended up doing, one did the artwork for the characters, one did the board itself, and one did all the graphic design. And we had an excellent experience with almost all of them. It was pretty much perfect all the way up through the end. The two that did the character design and the board design, Doug Scott for the board design and Jackie Inouye for the character design, they had everything, almost everything to us prior to the Kickstarter.
Oh.
When during the Kickstarter, we realized all of the graphic design needed to be redone because it didn't look the way that we wanted it to. And some of the other stuff needed to be redone. So we brought in Amit Gadge of Crimson Studios, actually out of India. And he was amazing, incredibly quick, wonderful. And the final product that you see here is because of him.
Quick's a big one. You got to find those artists that are quick. What was it, Ken?
Was it more of a style issue or a format issue?
Both.
Oh, okay.
It was hard to read the cards the way they were.
Yeah.
There are still some issues with it that I'll admit to. Some of the text is a little bit small in some areas if we try to fit a lot in there.
I could agree with that. I mean, we were looking at a couple cards, and it's like, ooh, my glasses. All
right. Right, right. And if I can do it again, if I found a way where I can fit everything that I wanted on the card the way that I wanted and make the text a little bit bigger, I would.
That's what second editions are for.
Right.
You know, that's,
and there's a lot of things that we'll do in the second edition if we get around to a second printing. I'll get to that also in a second. But one of the issues that we have with the cards and why they now look smaller is because we provided everything at the size that the manufacturer asked for the templates.
Oh, okay.
Which was fine, and we had everything scaled for that. And then they're like, "Oh no! We need to make this like a millimeter smaller." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
They're like, "Yeah, on all the edges, it goes a little bit smaller. Didn't we tell you that?"
Yeah, there's bleed on this. You're like, "You didn't say anything about bleed." Yeah.
We had the bleed. Okay. They still wanted it smaller.
Jeez.
So they made it smaller, and you know, you bring in 2 millimeters off of the space, or I guess collectively it'd be 4 millimeters off the space. When they shrink it down, everything gets a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit harder to read. So if we do a reprinting, I want to figure out a way to make it a little bit bigger there. We also, despite as much as we went through the rule book and all of the cards for proofreading, and we sent it to other people to proofread and double check everything, we get the game back. Oh, here's a typo. Oh, you forgot this. Oh, this rule is a little ambiguous. Can you help out here? And so I'm just taking notes of everything, and I'm trying to smile.
Here's the FAQ, guys. It's up on our line.
I'm going to be putting an errata up pretty soon on Board Game Geek, just like, this, and this. I'm totally serious. I'm going to do that pretty soon. And it's like, hey, guys, I realize there's some problems and there are some typos. Here's what it is. If we do a second printing, it'll be fixed.
That's frustrating. You just need that extra set of eyes to look at your stuff.
Well, that's the thing, too, is like the way we have, as we're speaking of the community that's grown up around hobby gaming, Board Game Geek, it's a site that's just like, it's put together by fans for the most part and like just constantly filled up with new information. But you get good, solid feedback from there because these are people who play board games at least once a week. And they're like, oh, I play this. It's like, so I have this feedback. And a lot of it's, I mean, you still have the internet, so you're still like, oh yeah, your art sucks. But you also have people who are like, oh no, I think this works here, but it wasn't clear in the rules. You're like, oh, well, thank you for that, and I can work with that.
And shout out to Scott Alden, the creator of Board Game Geek. Aldi and his entire crew are fantastic people, and they put a lot of work into that website. A lot of it goes as a thankless job, and they still do a fantastic job with it. So big shout out to them.
Yeah.
Well, back to this game. Like, is there, you mentioned like a second edition. Is that going to be in like the not too distant future? Like, what are the plans? Can you go into that?
All right, John.
If you can't, like, it's cool.
John, but, if you're listening, don't kill me.
I mean, to be clear though, do you mean a second edition?
Yeah,
like a second printing, or do you mean like an expansion?
Is there going to be another version of this game? Is there improvements that need to be made here? Short answer, yes.
Long answer, if we sell through our initial print run.
Okay.
So if we sell through our initial print run, we will do a Kickstarter for a reprinting of this game. Part of that reprinting will probably include changing up some of the wooden pieces, because one of the complaints that we got, and I see that smile on your face and you're going to say it, is that the wooden pieces don't match up with some of the symbols on the board.
No.
And it's not that they don't match up. It's just that you have to think about it for a second and it'll make sense. But people are like, oh, I don't see this symbol in these wooden pieces. And I'm like, that's a long story.
I think JPG had that exact issue with the light bulb pieces. Yeah.
Right. Being batteries. A battery instead.
Yeah.
That was a long story. We ended up getting the artwork for the pieces, for the wooden pieces, I should say. Not necessarily last minute, but the person that we were going to have do it dropped the ball. Mm-hmm. And so we commissioned somebody else to work with it. That's Lena Vega. She's been great. She's one of the people in my fifth edition group that I run.
Oh,
nice. She did all the artwork for it, and we loved it. And the thing is, it needed to be done quickly, because we were at the point where we needed to print and we didn't have all the artwork, and we were already behind in getting the games out to people. The game ended up shipping about 2.5 months late to the backers. Wait, which I hate doing.
So the board is one thing, and then the cards are one thing, and then like the pieces are somewhere else? Is that my understanding? Or is
so
it all the
we didn't originally have wooden pieces. Originally, it was going to be cardboard chits, punch-out pieces that you can use. During the Kickstarter campaign, we made a promise that if we funded within the first week, then we'd upgrade all the cardboard pieces to wooden pieces, and we funded in 4.5 days.
Oh,
so
that's a stretch goal, man. You gotta put that like no. If you guys hit that down there, not the.
but honestly, it's something that I wanted anyway.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to reward the people that had faith in us that early.
That's good.
So every game now has wooden pieces because those amazing backers got us funded within the first week.
Yeah.
And I can't say enough thank yous to everyone out there who did pledge for our Kickstarter, who pledged for a pre-order version of the game, or even if they didn't pledge, if they play tested or they gave us some feedback along the way. All of that has been tremendously important for us.
No, and it's actually, that's crazy, like how you can just build your community. It's not just like a playtesting, but you've built a community. You've built sort of a fan base with Kickstarter. Like, that's, I think it's a huge advantage for something like this.
Yeah. And I got to say, it's a little weird that people want my signature on things.
You're board game famous, dude.
I'm not. even the board game world, I'm not famous. But these people.
You're like the indie band of like the board game world.
Yeah.
I'm Sex Bob-omb.
There you go.
Okay. I do love Scott Pilgrim. Sorry, I love Scott Pilgrim.
It's good. My brain was like thinking, I'm like, wait, what's that other band? Like, there's a band.
Crash and the Boys?
Well, Crash and the Boys. No, I was going away from Scott Pilgrim, though. Oh. I was thinking for the band from, because it has Donald Faison.
Something at Demon Head?
That's
the Clash of Demon Head. Also from Scott Pilgrim.
It's
love
another
Brie Larson.
Oh God, Brie Larson
as Envy Adams. She was brilliant for that role.
But
anyway,
she,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
She was also in Community. She was the librarian who didn't want briefcase tacos. That's ridiculous.
That was only for a couple of episodes, right?
It's one episode.
That's
awesome.
All right.
But it was just Troy and Abed. It's like, books. I'm sorry. I love Community.
Yeah, please keep gushing.
But no. No, my brain was going to a different band, and I can't remember. It was with Donald Faison in She's at Can't Hardly Wait. It's like the band that like, gets together in it, and like they don't want to wear their shirts. I'm going
Donald Faison from Scrubs.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that band.
I'm sorry. This is an obscure reference. Anyways, carry on.
That's okay. I love obscure references. You might even say I name my company after them.
Yeah. Hence, one of your, I believe it was a Kickstarter exclusive characters, Dead Pirate. It's Dead Pirate.
Was it Rob Hearts or something?
Rob Hearts. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know what? You could pronounce it as you wish. Oh, I'm going to use that now. I love that. Yeah, the Dead Pirate Roberts, her backstory is a little bit similar to Wesley's from Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. We might be very, very tiny, huge fans.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I might have two or three cards in the game that are also Princess Bride references. That said, you killed my father, prepare to die, really powers up the hero, by the way. But yeah, no.
That's just part of like podcasting in California. Like everyone says, yeah, no. Like I don't know why.
So if you say no, yeah, it means no for sure. But if you say yeah, no, it means oh yeah, and then this.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
how did we do this? How did we evolve? Like okay, so yes, we have tons of obscure references. Tyranno de Bergerac was also added from the Kickstarter, and I love when people get that reference.
I got the reference, but I mispronounced it because my brain just said, I was saying Tyranno. And then JPG was like, oh, no, it's supposed to be like, it's Tyranno, like Cyrano. Like Cyrano. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know why I didn't just automate, but I'm like, my brain was just like, Tyrannosaurus.
Yeah. Yeah. And his special ability is that he's got a charming personality.
Yeah.
Which is kind of perfect. And every time I think of Cyrano de Bergerac, I also think of Steve Martin and Roxanne.
Yeah. You can't not. I mean, depending on your age.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is it's not exactly a recent thing. And I see so many people who light up when they get the reference, and I'm like, yes.
It's like you've definitely found your niche. It's like, oh, my people.
These are my people.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, both Tyranno de Bergerac and the Dead Pirate Roberts were community suggestions during the Kickstarter. So that was another part of the funding in a week. So we said, yeah, we'll make all the cardboard pieces wooden, but we're also going to let the community send us their ideas of who should be a 10th overlord, because we had 9 prior to that.
Oh, okay.
And whoever, send us your ideas, we'll take our top however many from that. I think we said top 5, and we'll let everybody vote on that. And whoever wins would be in the game. So we expected to get something like 20 or 30 entries. We got 70, something like that.
Dang.
And so instead of having people vote on 5, we had them vote on 10. So Tyranno de Bergerac won over Dead Pirate Roberts by 3 votes. So we decided, you know what? We're just going to put her in also. So now we have 11 overlords.
How did Waffles come about?
So you were talking about ideas and constructive criticism.
Right.
Shout out to Michael Yi Chow, who came over to playtest the game. And his big thing, he's really known for liking baristas and corgis. Like, if you know Yi Chow.
Very specific things. Yeah.
If you know Yi Chow, then you know that he loves baristas and corgis. It's kind of just a thing. And he came over to play the game. And at the end, he's like, you know what your game needs? And I go, no, Yi Chow, what does my game need? He said, you need a corgi named Waffles. And he just started laughing because he was, I don't think he was being serious at the time. But I was just standing there. I'm like, we need a corgi named Waffles in our game. And now there's a corgi named Waffles in our game. And it's by far the most popular character.
What if he had said barista?
A barista? I don't know how I'd make a barista an evil overlord, but then again, I did work at Starbucks, so.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, so much the fact that with Waffles is you have a pin on your website too for him now.
And Tyranno. Waffles and Tyranno both have enamel pins with them. Yeah. And those have been huge. Huge draws at shows. Like, even if people don't buy the game, they'll buy the pins.
They're like, oh, yeah, I like that pin.
Yeah.
Enamel pins have had a weird, like, I shouldn't say weird because they're cool, but, like, a really big upsurge lately. Like, I know, like, at different conventions and stuff like that, the people are just like, oh, I like a good enamel pin. Because it's better than a button that you can make in a...
Everything okay?
Is everything that I've been talking about been good so far?
Yeah.
Oh, you're
okay. Good.
And we're back. No, I'll edit that out. Just a long ass pause. Anyway.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Well, actually,
do you like obscure references? Do you like games? Well, then check out. No, sorry. Carry on.
No, please.
Next time we'll script that. We'll we'll get you in there.
Yeah, like I was like, I'm not going to go anywhere good with this.
I'll pass you the bribe under the door.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, speaking of your business.
And bribes.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand.
I know you promised Jason that you'd wait till you're on his show to talk about
it. Oh, jeez.
But.
I knew this was coming.
Yeah, I just. Well, you don't got to go. You don't have to explain the whole game, but I mean, what.
Just enough to upset Jason.
Exactly. Like, what's coming up for your company? What's the next game coming up?
All right, how about I give you an overview of what's coming out, and I'll tell you one thing that I'm working on right now that I'm really happy about.
Okay.
That's actually available right now.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. And then I'll get back to the expansion for Overlords. Did I say that out loud? Damn. All right. So Dimensions of Discord Online is my next game. And
online?
Yeah. It's a board game about being a guild leader in an MMORPG.
Oh, this actually sounds... I love the premise already.
Okay. Yeah. So I love weird ideas.
Yeah.
I played Final Fantasy XI.
Yes!
For 9 years, Valifor server represent.
Ken's like, finally another.
I'm trying to remember which server I was on.
If you were on Valifor or Kujata, they kind of merged together, so we might have known each other.
No, because I mean...
Well, I don't care anymore.
it's all over gone now, sorry.
Yeah. No, I loved Final Fantasy XI, a lot of the best years of my life I wasted on that game.
No, it was the first. It was technically the first Final Fantasy I played at like a lot. Like I played a little bit of it, but I never enjoyed the old, like the original, like menu battles is what I call it. Like attack level 5 with my sword,
weapon skill.
Yeah,
yeah.
But with that, it was a little more like if I ran around to the backside of an enemy, it would have an effect on the overall combat. And so, like, because I played a thief, and so if you attack from behind, you'd have a sneak attack or a trick attack. If you had, you know, it affected it more than just being like, oh, attack this. And so that was my first MMO I played, and I had a bunch of friends playing it, so it's like it made it such a bigger experience.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. No,
that's exactly what it was. Yeah. In fact, some of my, and I know I just said this about Frisbee earlier, but this goes even further back. I started playing when I was 18, and when I was 19... some of the people that I was communicating with in game, I found out that we worked at the same, not the same location, but the same store, Target. I worked in Target for a while. And then they also worked in Target. I'm like, oh, yeah. Which state? California. Oh, okay. Which city? Oh, I'm in Simi Valley. What? I'm in Valencia. That's like 30 minutes at most. So we met up. And Dustin and John and Chase and... these are all in case they might actually listen. It's a very slim chance, but I met them because of this game. And hi, Joe. Sorry, Joe. I met them because of this game, and we're still good friends to this day. And these are people I met online. I had an almost a year-long relationship with somebody that I met online who moved from Washington to California specifically to be in a relationship with me.
Did you get married in the game?
We did.
Nice.
Aw.
And then she realized that she was a lesbian, and she went back to Washington.
Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome because I think she's still with the girl, and that was I think it's been 9 years now.
Oh, well, okay, well, good.
Yeah,
for
good
them.
For yeah, good yeah, for them. I feel fantastic for them. Yeah.
Okay. Well, back to what? Well, what else can you tell us about the game other than
okay.
the premise?
So the idea is, I played very briefly World of Warcraft. It wasn't my thing, but I could see why it was others. I loved Final Fantasy XI. Very recently, as research, I have gotten into Final Fantasy XIV, which I'm enjoying. I did not like it the first time I tried it, but I do now.
What was your racing main class in the
in 11?
Yeah,
I was an Elvan summoner.
Okay,
that was my main, but I also did Black Mage and I did Monk and Paladin. And two of the things I was best known for. One, I ran a casino in-game, so I was one of those really annoying people that would shout for people to come bet their hard-earned gil at my casino. And, of course, I had ridiculous odds to win. Like, I had a 65% chance of winning, and people would still play all the time.
Like,
so I made a huge amount of money doing that. In-game money, I should clarify.
You weren't a gil seller online?
Eventually, I was. When I quit, I sold all my stuff. Out.
Yeah, I had a friend I just gave myself to. I was like, you know, it's better in your hands than mine.
I needed the money to buy a car, so
Oh, fair point. Yeah.
That was a long time ago. I don't think I'd do it again. But yeah, so I made a ton of money in the casino, and that was one of the things I was known for. The other thing I was known for was getting the Relic Shield Aegis for my Paladin when my Paladin was still level 23.
Wow.
Out of 75.
Oh.
I remember leveling up in a party and equipping the Aegis and everybody in the party going, "What the fuck?"
Man, I was Mithras. I was Mithras.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's two different.
Wildly different races.
Yeah. Mithra monk thief. Completely like, yeah. But no, it was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that game. But
Final Fantasy is research for this upcoming game.
Getting back to the topic.
Yeah.
Dimensions of Discord Online is intended to encapsulate both the frustrations and the joys of playing MMOs, because it puts you in the role of being a guild leader, which I did for a very long time. So it's kind of a guild management game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you played, I guess you probably haven't if you're rather new to board games, but Blood Bowl Team Manager?
I haven't.
I'm aware of Blood Bowl. I didn't know they had a team manager.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So Or if you played MLB The Show, the video game, where you're running the front office, and it's kind of like that.
Okay, that I'm a little bit more familiar with. Yeah,
sure, okay. So the idea is you are recruiting players to your guild. Mm-hmm. You send these players to do raids or to kill monstrous foes, which are world spawn bosses. Mm-hmm. And you can do PvP against other people. And you're trying to get equipment to give these to your players that you've recruited to your guild. And then you're going to build up your guild hall size and your guild's reputation. And at the end of the game, whoever's reputation is the highest is the winner. So every turn, there's patch notes that come out, and these patch notes will change something that you could do during your turns.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Like, I am shamelessly a fan of at least the first half season of Sword Art Online.
Yeah. I loved Agreed. The
concept.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic concept. I hated the second half of the first season.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
I was okay with it going forward after that, but I did not like Alfheim Online. Regardless, I loved the concept of Sword Art Online, and there's some other shows that have done that as well, like Log Horizon and Dot Hack have had similar concepts.
Dot Hack, now you're bringing back some memories.
Dot Hack's probably the oldest one I could think of.
Yeah.
I love the Dot Hack games, both the original and GU. I thought they were fantastic. And from what I hear, there's a remaster of GU coming out and then a new property based on Dot Hack as well, which I'm looking forward to. Regardless. One of the patch notes is we've encountered a bug where players can't or where players who die online die in real life. And that bug or that particular patch notes, it only comes up once, maybe. Mm-hmm. If your player dies in a raid or a world spawn, they are removed from the game. So that's one of the things. But the players that you're recruiting are meant to be kind of transitive. Or transient, I guess, is the proper word for that. As in, their worth, they cost a certain amount of reputation to buy them, quote unquote, to get to your guild. And then they're also worth that amount of reputation at the end of the game. They're also worth whatever equipment you put on them. So if they leave your guild for any reason, which is entirely possible, or you replace them because your guild has a cap of how many people you can have, you lose out on those reputation points. And you have to recruit new people.
Now, is this sounds like a one-player game.
Nope.
So essentially, it's four, let's say, four guild
Four
masters.
Seems to be where we are.
Okay, so four guild masters. Each of you are running your own individual guild within the same game system.
And at the beginning of the game, you get to name it, whatever you want to call it, which, whatever. Yeah. It's still very early. It's in beta, and I don't want to say too much about it because JPG will murder me.
No, it's just great that you broke the news here.
Yeah,
first time, folks.
Don't hold that over his head.
Well, I mean,
I will. If you've not listened to the network at all, like, I'm rubbing this in his face.
Well, it's also hard to because he's so short. So
he knows
everything's
this,
over his head. Oh, dang! Did I say that?
He knows. Oh, wow! That was all right, I have no comment about that one.
That's okay. It's the first time I've gone there. I don't know why I did.
I will tell you guys something that he knows about in passing, I think. And that's the lore behind this game is, you know how Warcraft has been around since like the early 90s?
Yeah.
And they started out with those single player campaigns and eventually grew into World of Warcraft. Well, the fictionalized history of Dimensions of Discord is that it goes back to being a text adventure game in 1979.
That's fantastic.
Called Dimension of Discord.
Okay. So we're talking like a Zork kind of thing?
Yeah.
Where it's, okay.
And I've made this.
Oh, no, I just played that on the app.
Did JPG send it to you?
No, you posted it on...
My Facebook?
Your Facebook, and I played it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was enjoyable.
It's getting bigger and bigger every day, and I keep updating it. It's at that link. And yes, that is Dimension of Discord. And did you get to the scorecard?
No, I had defeated the party of bandits.
Okay.
Or I should say escape the party of bandits.
No spoilers.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's not a huge spoiler.
But I had gotten around there, and then like something had taken my attention away. And because I went to the link through Facebook, like next time I loaded it up, it's like, oh, well, you want to look at the first person on the feed? Like, no, I was on that. Like,
okay, so we've implemented saves.
Okay.
You can totally save your game and load your game.
Nice.
As long as I have to test to see if I re-upload the file to that website, if it'll erase your save. I'm pretty sure it will. But honestly, the game is only like 10 to 15 minutes at this point. Yeah. So you get to the end, I ask people to screenshot their scorecard and share it, because I totally have a scoreboard and achievements, and you could see how many times that you died. And
a lot.
Yeah, like one of the achievements that I really like is you do not need glasses, because, oh, here's an Easter egg for you guys. If you can find really, really, really small text that you can click on somewhere, it'll tell you that you do not need glasses, and then you get an achievement worth 10,000 points.
Can you tell in your on your end if people are playing mobile versus PC?
I actually can't tell at all.
Oh, okay.
I can't tell who's playing, if they're playing, how far they got. That's why I asked people to screenshot their scorecard.
Okay.
Eventually that might be possible. I don't know if it's possible with the system that I'm working with.
Okay.
But that is available.
Because that's that type of achievement would definitely be different if, like, oh, I found it on my phone, which is this little thing, versus on the PC format.
Well, yeah. It works on mobile and desktop. Yeah. And the idea is it's going to be released for free.
Yeah.
But it started out as just a silly little idea that I was working with.
Yeah.
And it's grown so much now. I'm going to make it a full game.
Nice.
And I'm going to release it probably in the months prior to the Kickstarter for Dimensions of Discord, and then like have it available on that site. But the whole point of the game is to get people familiar with my sense of humor and what they can expect in terms of my games. Because Dimensions of Discord is definitely going to have its funny stuff.
Yeah.
But also a lot of the characters that you encounter in the text game are enemies that you might fight in the actual board game.
Nice.
And that's all I'm going to say on it.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you're going to be signing more board games as soon as more people get familiar with your work and your humor. And
I am working on a few games. Yeah. I mean, we publish our own, but I am working on some games with other developers that want to pitch it to other publishers, which is totally fine by me because we're small enough that we can't handle that yet.
Right.
So I have so many ideas that we can't do all of them ourselves. So working with other designers or pitching ideas that I come up with, or that some of my team members come up with, to other publishers is something that's already happening.
See, this is what I love to say: nerd going after something he loves, and it's actually, you know, built a nice community around it and supportive, welcoming, and that's just what I love about like tabletop gaming communities in general. Okay, we're coming up in an hour and a half. Let's wrap it up there, David. This was awesome, and especially for someone like me who's so new to this world, it was fun actually learning about, you know, the thought process and what goes into it. Where can they find you? Anything to plug? Or
sure, obscurereferencegames.com or overlordsofinfamy.com. We'll send you the same place. I know it's a really long name. But we're also on Facebook and Twitter.
But also a fantastic game, Overlords of Infamy.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you saying so. Yeah, Overlords of Infamy, it's actually available now. You can purchase it. We'll send it to you. All you have to do is give us money. It's pretty amazing. We also have pins available. We're going to have a Redbubble site up soon if you like the character artwork and you want to get that on a shirt or a mug or something like that. That'll be available. We'll provide those links. But yeah, come find us. Talk to me. I love talking to people.
All right. And awkwardly. Again, question?
Will you be attending Stan Lee's LA Comic Con?
Working on it. My contact, the ones that get us into there, they're seeing if they're going to have a board game room this year.
Okay.
And if they are, then I will be there.
All right. So if you want to look it up on the website, and hopefully we'll have info there.
Also, check out Strategicon in LA. We will be there in February for sure.
And Ken, where can they find you?
They can find me at Kent Rollo. And they also find me at my comic shop at Comics TNT in Tustin, California.
And you can find me on Instagram at Justin_. I can't talk after this. This is the first time where I've screwed up this part. And then, like, hopefully I get the next part right.
It's okay. You've had less beer this time, but it's okay.
But that's true. Oh, maybe that's what it is. I'm not as loosened up. Yeah. Anyway, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Malari and on Twitter at Justin_Malari. And you can find everything Geek Say What with the handle at Geek Say What on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, I think. Sure.
Yeah. Neopets, I've heard too.
Neopets. Yeah. Zanga, wow. MySpace.
Blast from the past.
Friendster.
Is Tom still your friend on MySpace? Yeah.
I saw him on Facebook, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Tom is definitely on Facebook.
And then don't forget to check out the other two shows on the Geek Say What Network. We have Geek.io, hosted by Justin Madriaga and Ish, and Ready Set Geek, hosted by Alex Gullett, Cole, and JPG. Sorry, we stole your thunder. Actually, I'm not that sorry.
Don't worry, JPG. I got way more for you.
And shout out to Whalen Productions. You can find them at Whalen Productions. WhalenProductions.ws. They share the space with us and help us sound great. They let us use their equipment. Don't forget to check out all their projects, like We're Alive and what was the other one?
Bronzeville.
And last but not least, shout out to Jordan Dene. You can find her at JordanDene.com. She is our apparel sponsor. She works out of Brooklyn, New York. She helps you look nerdy, and she's eco-friendly. So don't forget to check her out.
Awesome.
Yeah. And again, David, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
This is a lot of fun.
And don't forget to rate, comment, subscribe to join the offensive.
Smash that like button.